Hey guys, what is going on? Welcome back to another podcast on TAT. I'm with Ram once again. We did the last stream together. Was a bit happier than I think we're going to be today, but yeah, we have to talk about it. We have to talk about what happened yesterday. We've had about just under 24 hours to think over and maybe look at a few things. But Ram, how are you, mate, first of all? And yeah, just how are you feeling right now, mate, over this whole shambles?
Tired, and I feel pathetic. That's what Liverpool succumbed me right now. I just feel very pathetic. Like Ali said it right there, pathetic. That is the best way to describe me today. I feel pathetic because of these certain players in our team that are not performing, and certain people within our football club as well. Mm-hmm. The last four games have covered the cracks that were already open, and people thinking that we may have a chance of strolling back into top four. Never happens with Liverpool Football Club. We make things difficult for ourselves, and that's how it goes. So yep, we'll chop it up and we'll see. We'll assess the damages that we've done so far.
Absolutely. We would do that. And today we're going to be discussing the game itself. We're going to be talking about what went right, but there wasn't much, but definitely what went wrong. The weaknesses we have in our team, both defensively in the midfield and attack, because I believe there's issues everywhere. It's not just the midfield, which everyone is obviously alluding to. That's probably the main concern, but there's problems everywhere and we've got stats and stuff to back that up. And we're also going to be talking about Klopp. We're going to be discussing him and his input in what's happened and maybe some of his comments yesterday. And then the Mateus Nunes situation, which broke at halftime, which I don't think was the nicest times to tweet something as pathetic as that. But guys, there's 14 of you in there. Make sure you smash that button, subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. And yeah, let's get the show on the road, mate. So first of all, the game starts, the lineup comes out. I remember hearing from Grizz, he tweeted it this morning as well, so shout out Grizz if you're watching. He said that he's never felt defeated before when the Liverpool team's announced. But he said yesterday when that lineup was announced, he felt like this game is going to be a defeat. And I thought, whoa, that's actually crazy, because Ram, we've grown like as Liverpool fans over the last 3, 4, 5 years with this team. We go into every game winning. Like, there's no one that can come and beat us. And if they do, fine, fair enough. But now we're in the situation, mate, where our fans are looking at the lineups and thinking Brentford, and that's a loss. So first of all, mate, how did you feel when you saw that lineup? Did you agree? Did you feel the same? Or did you think, you know what, it's not ideal, but we can get the win?
To be honest, it's not going to sound great. I didn't even see the lineup before the game. It was like straight away 7, it was 5:30. I was like, oh, crap, we're playing. Then I had a look about 5 minutes in. I was like, okay, this is going to be difficult, because Brentford, first of all, the community, Brentford Community Stadium is probably one of the toughest grounds to go to in the Premier League, especially where the way they are. The fans were incredible that game, and it's difficult to get points from there. Where we saw it last season, we thought we would be getting 3 points. Next thing you know, they come back again. And again, so I wasn't confident going into this game. Even if we played a different midfield, it's Brentford. We have to put some respect on their name, and the way they play, especially at their home ground, is not ideal for us. And given the state that we're in, I didn't think we're going to do anything. I still thought we could scrape a 1-0 or 2-1 win. But again, wishful thinking, because yesterday didn't show anything. It is what it is. But again, I wasn't optimistic about the game, mainly because Brentford are just a good team, and we're just, at this moment, we're not convincing.
Absolutely not, mate. And you know, I went to the Leicester game last week, and I remember saying to my brother, I said this to you on the terrace as well, that if we play anything like that away at Brentford, you can forget it. You can absolutely forget any chance of winning the game, first of all, and even drawing the game, because the warning signs were there literally a few days before in how we were playing, what the midfielders were doing. the chances that we were missing, the defending, it was all there. And I just can't see for the life of me why these issues weren't addressed. And okay, right, we're going to Brentford away, who are a better team than Leicester, especially at home. We've made these mistakes at home. We got away with it from two freak goals, own goals. Now we need to kind of think, okay, we've got a one with one there and be better against Brentford. And we wasn't. We was worse, in my opinion. And we'll get on to the individual moments in the game, but I'm just going to get through some of your comments. This one, Inzi, it's probably not Inzi I'm going to go with. To be honest, mate, I don't want to talk about Jude. I'm fed up. If he doesn't want to come to this team, you honestly can't blame him. I hope he does. I still hope we go and get him. But if Jude Bellingham's looking at us right now, I don't want to go there. You can't blame the kid.
Look at Madrid's midfield. But at this moment, obviously Kroos, Modric, and Tchouaméni is the starting midfield. They got Camavinga as well. And Bellingham will be like, my midfield partners are sorted. 10 years from now, we're going to be playing with each other. Bellingham, Tchouaméni, and Camavinga.
Bellingham, Milner, Henderson.
who have we got that is going to be playing next to Bellingham for the next 10 years? Elliot? But he's not a centre midfielder. So, I don't know what we're going to do. I can't be asked for Jude. I can't be asked to talk about him, man. Really.
The convert is just the same thing. We are people saying that he's going to come. Madrid's people are saying they're going to come. Let's just see what happens, I guess. And like Ali says, I just want to focus on the team right now and get the wins, mate. But thanks for tuning in, bro. And we'll get on to some more of the transfer rumour stuff a bit later on. But we need to discuss the game first of all, mate, because that's the most important thing. I thought the first 5-10 minutes, it wasn't too bad. We had that early chance with Nunes. And I know Terry yesterday got a screenshot of like the worst possible moment where it looks like Nunes has an open goal. But when I watched it back, and I remember watching it at the time, it never felt like he had the ball under control, ready to get the shot off. It always felt like as soon as he touched the ball, Ben Mee, wasn't it? Yeah, he was already there on the line. So look, I'm not just trying to keep making excuses for Nunes, because again, there's a segment coming up in the stream and the podcast about the chances that we have missed, and there's a lot to say about Nunes in that department. But in that one particular moment, I don't think it was an easy situation for him. What, I don't know if you saw it differently, mate.
I think he did everything right. I think this pass from Salah was brilliant. I think the touch to get it away from David Raya was brilliant, and the shot was on target. It's just the fact that Ben Mee decided to do a madness and become prime Carlos Puyol and clear it off the line. I seriously can't think of anything else that Nunes could have done, unless you're going to blast it into the roof of the net, which, again, is a risk, because if you try and blast it in the roof of the net, it'll probably go over the bar. So yep. I think he couldn't do any more. I really couldn't. And everything he did at that point before the shot was almost immaculate. But if you got defenders that do that, you just have to say fair play. Fair play to him.
I agree. It just felt like he already read the situation. And once Nunes had gone round the keeper, he was already there for me. And it's just a shame as well, because we'll get onto it in a bit. But the one chance that he scores, it was a really good finish, but he was offside. So again, there's a lot to say about Nunes. And guys, keep your comments coming in and we'll talk about Nunes in a bit. But all it took, mate, was 19 minutes for Brentford to get the lead against us. And this comes from a set piece, which, you know, it's so easy for Brentford to score goals. Just give them corners and they'll score. But first of all, mate, the thing where I think the goal came from, Virgil van Dijk against Mbeumo. Now, I said it, as soon as Virgil started chasing him, he ain't getting there. He's running in mud. And I remember, mate, when this guy used to outpace players like Mbappe and Adama Traore, and, you know, he could keep up with the quickest of players. And now Mbeumo's quick, but it's a worry for me seeing Virgil have nowhere near that same impact he once had, mate. I don't know if that's something you're looking at as well with Virgil. Don't know if it's to do with his ACL. I don't know. You know, everyone told me, oh, he's saving himself for the World Cup. Well, that's all gone now. So, you know, if he was saving himself for the World Cup, then I expect prime Virgil to be back. And I think he started to play well for a couple of games, but yesterday it was back to the Virgil that kind of makes me sit here and worry and thinking, has that Virgil gone though?
I think so. I think that was a mark of what we're going to see for the next couple of years. I'll give you a good example. Mats Hummels. Yeah. I think he's going to have the same trajectory as Mats Hummels. And if anyone knows, Mats Hummels is one of my favourite centre-backs back in the day. I used to love Mats Hummels because he was big, he was strong and dominant, but he could also keep up with so many strikers. Then once he had that injury, I think it was 2014-15, a couple of series of injuries, his pace was gone. And when he went to Bayern, he was never the same player. And then when he went back to Dortmund, he was never the same player. And I think it's the case Virgil is having the same situation as Mats Hummels had. In his peak, in both their peaks, they were unstoppable. They were war. They were incredible. But now, once they do have a serious injury, then they change. They're no longer the same player. And that yesterday, the way his acceleration, trying to get into that starting sprint, right? It was so bad. I was like, what has happened to you? Like you're not that slow. You're actually very quick. But it looks so bad. And I think it's just a case of he's getting older and he hasn't got the pace that he used to have. Maybe the injuries have accelerated that, probably.
Oh,
so now
100%.
He needs to focus on other things, his positioning, his organization of his feet. That those stuff will help prolong his career.
The injuries are 100% a big factor here. Like, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind. Virgil's only 31, and you know, in his PFA season where he won that, the UEFA Player of the Year, which seems a long time ago now, and he was getting into, you know, Team of the Seasons on a regular basis and all of that. You're thinking this guy could, with the attributes he has, play what, 36, 37? Still, like, look at Thiago Silva. But now I'm looking at him and thinking, this guy, like, is just a shadow of the player he was. And I'm really hoping he can get back to it, because we know how good he was. He's the best centre-back I've ever seen at Liverpool. And there's conversations where you could put him up there with the greats, you know, the Alan Hansons of this world. And, you know, he has a strong case for that. And he still does, by the way. Just, you know, that 3 or 4 year peak was better than anyone I've seen, especially at Liverpool. But, you know, the longevity thing comes into it, and let's just see what happens, because maybe, you know, when the team gets better, which we're all hoping it does, he will slowly come back to himself. And, you know, you also have to factor in that, you know, the midfield's not doing its job, the players next to him aren't doing their job, and there's so many, like, reasons as to why. But when you're just looking at those foot races that Virgil used to win 9 times out of 10, if not 10 times out of 10, he's not doing that anymore. And that's a worry for me, because, like I said, he was pacing the most quickest players in the league, and he's not even pacing players that aren't even top 10 anymore. So it is a worry.
Ben, I mean, given the situation with our centre-backs, I said this on the Terrace group chat, if Sepp didn't destroy his ankles, I would have told and made Klopp recall him back from Schalke, because that's how bad our centre backs have been this season. Like, this is how desperate I got, because Sepp is a kid; he's still learning. He's the whole point of him going to Schalke, and to be fair to him, when he was at Schalke, he was doing quite well before that injury. Mm. And then to call him back in a situation like ours, I didn't want to do it. But our centre backs, all of them, even, I mean, Konate, yes, it was his first really, really poor performance. Matip has been on and off this season. Sometimes it can be great, sometimes it can be absolutely poor. Then Gomez is just, Gomez has that calamitous moment every game, every time he steps onto the field. And Virgil's not been the same. And I'm like, who else can we go to? Like, Klopp doesn't trust Nat. So the only option is recall Sepp. Because we don't have anyone else that is playing at a level that is expected of Liverpool Football Club. And I was like, let's track on the youngsters now. Because if they can't be arsed, then what's the point?
I, I agree. I 100% agree. But let's move on a bit, mate. They get a goal disallowed from a corner again. I think it's Wisser who's offside. And at that point, mate, you know, before it's disallowed, we're thinking we're 2-0 down. The moment of relief when the VAR came in and intervened and gave it offside, I was like, oh, okay, we've got a wave one here. Let's react. Let's respond. Let's think, okay, we've got a chance now. Didn't happen, did it? And another corner came and another goal came. And this one was onside. The ball goes in. It was offside. They had two disallowed, didn't they? I'm actually on about the goal here. That wasn't from a corner, was it? That was just a cross into the box. Two corners that were the two goals that got disallowed, you think, you know what? Let's wake up now. Let's, you know, get our backsides into gear. And then, for their goal, mate, what is the reason for you? Because, again, people are taking pictures of Trent. People are saying that, oh, he's got to do better in that. But it's that same situation where he's doubled up on for me. And as good as I think Trent Alexander-Arnold is, you know, as an all-round player, I think defensively in the last few games, he has been very good. And, you know, the same people that criticize him for not being able to defend or supposedly not being able to defend, they don't seem to be giving him the praise for when he actually does that. But in this case, mate,
I have to say Terry has to have a go at him.
I don't think it was on him this one. I think it was a whole we've seen this so many times, haven't we, this season alone, where the ball comes in and there's about three players not doing the job.
Do you know what is the big reason why it's not him? Because Fabinho is playing in the back five. If Fabinho's in the back five, then you can have a case. But if Fabinho wasn't in the back five and he was in front, like in the edge of the box, then you could have a case. There is no case for me that Trent Alexander-Arnold is at fault for that goal. Because Trent, if you look at the screenshots again, Fabinho was on his man, but Konate was too touch tight to Fabinho instead of his own man. So if he went a couple yards further back, everything would have been fine because he would have had the perfect position for him to challenge for the ball and head it away. But because Trent is marking, I think it was Vitali Yanel who's behind him, he has every right to be like, I need to focus on Yanel. Konate, you need to focus on Wisser. And we saw what happened. Konate mistimed his header and mistimed his jump and couldn't head the ball. And then Wisser got onto it. And to be fair, I swear, this game, Alisson tried his utmost to make sure it didn't go in the net.
He's just unlucky.
But you can't ask him to save every damn shot he faces.
No.
Like, it was that Wisser one in the corner, the first corner that they got disallowed. I think he said about Ethan Pinnock's header, then he saved his rebound, then his second rebound, and then Wisser ends up scoring in the net. And he's like, what am I supposed to do? Like, what am I supposed to do? I can't do everything. I'm not flipping Superman, and I can't go from one side of the net to the other. And then it was Wisser's own goal. And to be fair, he's the guy that pointed out it came off Ben Mee. It shouldn't be a goal. But I just feel sorry for Alisson. Right?
Yeah. Listen, there's a whole thing coming up we're going to get into with the chances conceded, but I think that's a good point, mate. This man has just done way too much this season. He's going to be our player of the season again, I'm pretty sure. He was mine last season. So many people said Mo Salah, but it was Alisson for me.
I was on that. I was on that train since, I think it was that Crystal Palace game. I was like, big up the boys on Coppish, because I did their player ratings. And when people say, obviously, Salah had that incredible moment from November to December, Alisson was also doing his thing during that period. But because Salah scored the goals and got those moments, people forget how good Alisson was. And look, I said he should have been player of the season. I think this should have been the first time a goalkeeper should have been player of the season. But forwards always get the glory rather than the goals.
Yeah, he's by a mile, and I don't think anybody would argue this, our most consistent player. Like, you know, he might have the bad one or two bad games a season, but it's never usually more than two or three. And obviously, his worst form was when he had so much stuff going on personally, which I think, you know, we can all understand that. Mm. And apart from that, I've not really seen a bad run of form from Alisson that I have in other goalkeepers. So 100%, we are so blessed to have him. And to be honest, mate, he probably deserves better than this. This man should be winning Champions League after Champions League, cementing himself up there with the great goalkeepers. And he is for me. But, you know, I just hope at the end of his career, especially with us, his honour list will...
I don't want to make an Alisson loving show, but I said this on the terrace. Ability-wise, Alisson is top five goalkeepers in the Premier League of all time. Top five for me. And people looked at me a little bit funny, being like, hang on a minute, that's mad. How can you say top five? And I'm like, not career-wise, ability-wise, he's top five. He's better than Van der Sar. And he's in the conversation with Peter Schmeichel and Petr Cech, who's seen as the number one and number two goalkeepers. So, and people looked at me like, you're mad, because he hasn't won the trophies like those, and hasn't got the longevity as them. And longevity is fine, because I agree, Alisson Becker for me is a late bloomer of a goalkeeper, because he came around about 26, 27. But if we're talking on pure ability, in terms of all the attributes of a goalkeeper, I think only Peter Schmeichel arguably tops him in certain attributes, and is more or less neck and neck. I think Petr Cech is just in terms of overall, I think just Alisson tips it. But Petr Cech stops hopping, his reflexes, everything was incredible. So I have to give it to him. So
it's a great point, mate. And he's 100% the best we've had in my lifetime. Obviously, there's other ones from back in the day, but we think we've got our goal. An amazing ball from Thiago. You know, I'd love him to play those balls when Nunes is onside, but there it is. And Thiago, I thought, was a kind of a hot and cold game yesterday. But Nunes, with his pace, he actually finishes it this time. Unfortunately, the flag goes up, and you just sat there thinking, is it ever going to happen for Darwin Nunes? Because, again, he's missed that chance early on. He's finally got this one, but it's offside. And I don't want to get too much into Nunes right now, but because, you know, we spoke about him a lot on the last show, and I think our opinions still say the same. Me and you are still confident that this guy's going to be the real deal at some point. But at that point, mate, like, I don't know about you, but I just felt like, yeah, this is just not meant to be. This is just not meant to be. But we do get our goal, and it comes from an amazing Trent Alexander-Arnold ball with his left foot, by the way. And Oxlade-Chamberlain, it's ironic because, you know, we all sit here and say, oh, he's not good enough. He's the one that scored. And I'm not saying that justifies his performances, because, again, I don't think he's good enough. But after that, mate, again, it's the same principle as I mentioned earlier. You finally got a bit of luck. You finally got a bit of joy. Now let's press. Now let's go all out. Now let's go and win this game. Like Liverpool used to do, by the way. When a team had a lead against us, if we got a goal back, I was always confident that, you know, we're going to get the win here. I didn't see anything change in that performance, mate.
We went back to the first half. We went back to playing as Liverpool in the first half. The passing was slow. No ingenuity, no invention, no dynamism from anybody. It was all sideways, backwards, dilly-dallying on the ball. And I'm like, are we just ever going to do anything? We got the goal. We are in the ascendancy. Are we going to do something now? And we didn't. I don't remember a good chance we had on goal after we scored. I can tell you all the ones that we had before, all the ones that, like the Nunes chance. I think Salah had a chance. I'm not saying Salah. Robertson ran behind the defence and put a good ball in, which was defended well by Brentford. I can name you all that. That was before the goal. After the goal, absolutely nothing. Nothing at all. And I don't even think Brentford really changed that much after the goal. It's mainly after like 80th minute they were like, okay, fine, we're gonna see out the game and play on the counter. Mm-hmm. I didn't think they changed a lot, and that's what really got me annoyed, because we didn't offer anything after that. And that's where we're like, Liverpool of old would do everything to get the win or draw at least. And I didn't see that. I didn't see that at all. And I'm not, I wasn't happy at all about it. It's that we gave up, I think.
100, that, you know, you took the words right out of my mouth, mate. It just felt like, you know, the first few moments I had the ball after the goal weren't going our way, and they just kind of lost concentration, motivation, and it just, you know, oh, this is gone now. And again, like, I'm not going to say I would have been happy with a point, but even a point, like, even to just get one goal, to like, okay, fine, no one's going to sit here celebrating, no one's mood's going to be any different if we get a point or if we lose. Even if we won, I think we'd still be sat here saying the same things. But even just to go and get a point in that situation, how long was left? Half an hour? It's like, why have we not seen any changes? Liverpool used to, like we've both said here, go and like take up five gears when they've got that goal. When they smell blood, that's what we were the best at. And teams used to be so scared to play against us. Teams used to fear us.
First game I can think, sorry Ben, first thing I can think of was Aston Villa away. Robertson scored in the 88th minute. Sadio Mane scored in the 94th minute.
Never happened in the season.
I can't. Absolutely. Unless Alisson goes up for a corner, maybe, maybe. Like honestly, that Nottingham Forest game, I remember, I was like, you know what? I think we can score because Alisson's going up. His aura of being like, I scored a goal, I can do it again. And he almost did to an extent. So I'm like, I only feel that like 90th minute goal if Alisson's going up to score a goal. That's it. That's how pathetic this is. That's how down bad we are. Mm. And you think of the players that we have, Konate scored goals for fun in the Champions League last season, in the FA Cup semi-final. Van Dijk, the most dominant aerial presence.
He's never scored enough goals for me, man. When he was in the best of his
peak. Nottingham Forest was on him. He had two chances. Yesterday, in terms of defensively, was on him. And we missed that a lot. The only goal we scored from a corner was against Bournemouth when it was 5-0. Are you kidding me?
And with the height we have in our team as well, that's just pathetic. Right? Mm. You know, Brentford, all due respect to them, they've done incredibly well. Coming up from the Championship, keeping pretty much the same spine of the team. Yeah. Thomas Frank, absolutely incredible manager. But they are smarter than us from set pieces. Brentford, like how Liverpool Football Club, one of the biggest clubs in the world, how have we not got that invention in us, or that imagination to do something else rather than just one of our fullbacks walk over and hoof a ball into a box and hope for the best? How are we not being able to come up with clever ideas to get goals and set pieces? Because to be fair, we used to. I remember we getting a set piece was a big thing for us, like, you know, not so long ago. But now it's just like, be prepared for a goal kick or something, like, you know, it's just going to be the possession given away. But let's get on to their third goal, mate, because there's some more stuff we need to discuss. Simple ball over the top. I thought at first Konate did well to keep up and to get goal side, and to, I don't know what he was going to do after that point, but he just fell over. And that's the bottom line. I was waiting for the contact when I seen the replays, and I thought any minute now you're going to see him get clipped. It doesn't happen. And then you've got Jurgen Klopp coming out in the press after the game crying about it, saying it shouldn't have been allowed. I don't know if you saw it any differently to me, mate, but I just think it was pathetic from Konate. And like you said, it was his first really, you know, bad game for us yesterday. I've not seen him play like that in a Liverpool shirt, but I just thought he fell over. And to be fair, like, the comments that Klopp said after the game were just really, really bitter.
Konate is 6'5" or 6'4" or something like that. And Mbeumo is about 5'10". I'm sorry, you are not allowed. The way Konate is built as well, you're not allowed to get bullied by someone like Mbeumo. The referee is not going to give you a free kick for something like that. He will look at you and he'll look at Mbeumo. It's like, you shouldn't be getting out muscled by him. And I looked at it, it was like, there's no contact. I knew there was not going to be any contact. We all knew he was going to play for the foul. As soon as he let the ball bounce onto the pitch, then we knew, yeah, it's definitely is going to be a sticky one for him. And it was. And we have to, I don't know. I really don't know what to say. It was just shambolic.
This is the thing, mate. Like, Matip's performances in the last two games was all crying for Konate to come back in. Now I don't have a clue who I want to start.
Nat Phillips. I'd
give him a go against Wolves, see if he can do any better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You go Phillips, Konate against Wolves, give Konate another chance because, like we said, it was just a one-off game, hopefully, and see what happens. But if Nat Phillips is starting for us, then that is mad, and the other guy should be sold immediately because that is just crazy that we're having to do that.
I tell you this, in terms of performances in 2022, when we came back from the World Cup, who's had the best centre-back performance, defensive performance, display, other than that Villa game? I have to put a caveat to that.
I'm not sure.
Nat Phillips against City.
Oh, yeah, he was actually wearing that game.
He was very good that game. Probably the only mistake he had was that he mistimed his leap for the third goal. Mm. And to be fair, he was already marking his own man and shouldn't be expected to head away a deep cross from someone, and someone should be marking their run, Henderson. But the less said, the better.
Yeah, and look, we'll get onto a couple more general conversations that I've got lined up. But my mate Kev says, give Shirley from the canteen a go next game. It's actually Karen and Caroline. Liverpool legends. So respect Karen and Caroline. Mate, I've got some images. There was an article that Paul Joyce put out, and we're just going to talk about Liverpool in general, because like I said at the start of the pod, I believe that everyone's so obsessed with the midfield, and yes, 100% that is the biggest weakness, but there's so many more areas where we're really struggling at the minute, and it's just formed this big collective, and that is why we aren't winning as many games as we should. And it starts from here, mate. There's a graphic on the screen. I don't know if you guys can see that. I don't know any other way to zoom into it. But this graphic basically shows the chances that we've faced. And as you can see, there's only Leeds and Fulham above us. Now, let me just remind you, Fulham just came up and Leeds have been relegation fodder for a few seasons. So, yeah, 55 for Leeds, 54 for Fulham. And this is for the guys that are listening on Spotify, by the way. I'm reading these out. Liverpool are third on 51, mate. And then, look, on the other side, there's Nottingham Forest on 41, Southampton on 40, Villa on 40, Palace on 37. We are amongst these teams, mate, that, you know, you wouldn't be surprised if they got relegated. So, first of all, mate, what are your thoughts on that? And why is that happening?
Alisson Becker deserves an MBE. I don't know if he's allowed to get an MBE. I feel so sorry for him. As soon as I see 51 big chances faced for our goalkeeper, who probably is expecting to face around about 20 or 30 maximum, and then even pushing it with 30, but 51 big chances. It's not like some pot shots from 35 yards out. It's probably shots within the box.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that our goalkeeper have to do that? There's a reason why. There was also the reason why I said Alisson should have got player of the season. Because the amount of big chances he saved for us. Like, I can name it off every single game, every time he saved it last season. And why I've been crying, saying that this guy should have got it instead of Salah. And now we're seeing that it's been blown out of proportion. Like, this, compared to last season, was not as bad. But this
season, is already more, I think, than last season.
100%. That is
now the whole of last season, and this is not even halfway through.
Like, I don't think any goalkeeper should be expected to face 50 shots from an elite team. 50 goal-scoring opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
How many goals have we conceded this season? About 20 or 30, 25?
In the league? We have conceded 22.
So basically,
Newcastle have conceded 11, just for context.
Yeah. So basically, in context, with the big chances faced and 22 goals conceded, 29 of them, Alisson saved or has intervened. That is mad. How is this possible?
And what do you think? Because I say, it's the midfield, it's everything. What, like, how? First of all, how do you think we solve this? Is it as simple as going out buying a Moises Caicedo, or is it a system change? Does Klopp need to do something?
A system revamp, because
people are saying 3-4-3. Do you agree with changing the shape?
I don't see how 3-4-3 is going to help. I feel like we'll just get even more exposed. The problem is we're losing our midfield battles. Take one midfielder out, we are definitely going to get overrun in midfield. I don't see how we're going to do that. The big problem is we play the stupid high line, like stupid, stupid high line, and then we don't have the play. Well, we do have the players, but the problem is the players do not retain the ball well. They try to do something, and as soon as they turn it over, we are ready to get exploited by that. The whole point of playing the high line at a certain point is that you need to hope that your midfield or your forwards do not play stupid balls, stupid hospital balls that gives possession away needlessly. You hope that you open teams up, play quick football, and that in hopes that you can get a chance or create a chance for you to score a goal. The problem is, when we do give the ball away, we give it away in such needless areas, and it will hurt us because all they need to do is play one straight ball or one ball to their striker. They will hold it up and someone from midfield just runs across and then they're already through on goal. Like, I don't know. I think a system revamp needs to happen. I think this high line with the players that we have right now, they can't do it anymore.
That's exactly the point. Exactly the point. Because people go on about this high line and whatever. And, you know, we've been playing this high line for four or five years now. This isn't a new thing. Like, I feel like people think it's just coming over the last couple of seasons. We were at our absolute best when we played this high line. You know, when Virgil van Dijk was in the peak of his power, Henderson could actually move. You know, he'd be playing right back when Trent bombs forward. And every time we got countered, Henderson would be there filling in. You don't see that happen anymore. Virgil's getting outpaced now. We didn't see that happen ever. And you're right. I think it's run its course. And I don't know what the solution is. I'm not clever enough in terms of tactics to think, okay, Liverpool have these players. This is what we need to do. That's Jürgen's job. That's Pep's job. They have to make that decision. And, you know, we saw Klopp change things to like a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-4-2 this season. Maybe worked or didn't work for a couple of games. Like you're saying, now we need to see something change properly.
It's
fine. Go ahead.
The only answer I can give in terms of system change that I know that would work is going forward. 4-4-2, I think it would work. Because I think Darwin Núñez plays better when Salah is around him. He doesn't like it when Salah's nowhere near him. He's so isolated without anyone near him. And we saw how he played at Benfica. Like, Benfica, he had Rafa Silva, who's a pacey technical player who would run around him or play 1-2s with him or will create the space so that he could get an opportunity. I feel as though the only way we could get him in a really good situation and probably in a good vein of form is by playing something that he's used to. And playing Salah with him, I think, will also benefit Salah as well, because Salah will have someone to play with and allow him to move the ball around a lot quicker with somebody else. And then it wouldn't force him to go wide to pick up the ball and expect him to dribble past a couple of players and then play a 1-2 and then get in a position to score. It's a lot more simpler for him. And maybe we could also see Harvey Elliott do better as well, because he likes to hug that touchline. Make him play in that right midfield spot, maybe he might do the job.
I agree.
Personally, it could work. But does it work defensively? I don't know. But going forward, in theory, it works for me.
What have we got to lose, realistically? You know what I mean? There's nothing to lose. We're already shambles. Top four is on-ish, but, you know, nowhere near as much as it would have been had we won yesterday. So we haven't got anything to lose, really. It's better to take a gamble and to see if we can change things up than to keep the same system, the same stale tactics, and to get further and further away. Moving on to the other end of the pitch, mate, failing to convert. Liverpool have scored less than their expected XG in 6 of their last 9 Premier League games. As you can see, Brentford, Leicester, Villa, Southampton, Spurs, Leeds, Forest, West Ham, Man City. That's a worry. A lot of people will pin this on a lot of it on Darwin Nunez, and I guess this is where we have to talk about him. And the next one, similarly, lack of ruthlessness. No team has had more big chances in the top 5 in 2022-23 than Liverpool, but their conversion rate is the worst in the league at 27.6%. Again, you look at the teams that are around us, Everton, Forest, Leicester, Southampton, and with the attacking power that we have on that we thought we had, mate, that's a worry, isn't it?
100%. We, if you go off those stats right now, we've got double the amount of chances created than your likes of Forest, your Everton, your Leicesters, and your Southamptons. But for some reason, we cannot score a goal. Maybe, and I think a big part of it, and I think this is a pretty damning stat as well, is that Darwin Nunez has missed 15 big chances.
Mm-hmm.
But also, our best player, Mohamed Salah, has missed 12.
Thank you.
Which people won't talk about. Thank because you. It's Mohamed Salah.
Mm-hmm. And
to be fair, Mohamed Salah has been earned a right to not have as much criticism towards him because of what he's done for the last couple of seasons. And the
standards are higher, no?
But you took the words right out of my mouth. There's new information. He's on £300,000 a week. He's been asking for that kind of money. And now he has to be a player that would be like, yeah, I'm the best paid player at Liverpool Football Club. I earn double the amount of Alisson Becker and Trent Alexander-Arnold. I will prove to you why I earn double the amount of those lot. And missing 12 chances is not good enough. Mm-hmm. For Darwin Nunez, 15 is extortionate. It's too much.
Oh, it's still nowhere near good enough.
It's stinky. It's so stinky. But I expected him to miss chances. Because, like I said, the expectations that I had with Darwin Nunez was that sometimes he will look amazing. And sometimes he will look like a donkey. That's the nature of Darwin Nunez in his first season. That's what I thought was going to happen. So I kind of expected it. Not from our best player, / some people want to say our greatest ever Premier League player. So expectations are high. You've done what you've done and given yourself a reputation of being this incredible player. So there are standards that we need to keep. And missing 12 chances for the caliber player that you are, not good enough. Not good enough.
I agree. And we're not here taking digs at Salah to justify Nunez at all. What we are saying is that, you know, when we're in the mud like we are now, we expect our leaders, we expect the greatest players that we've seen in the Premier League to turn up and to deliver. And there's a comment here from Ali A, which I'm sorry, mate, but I've got responses. But why is Pep Lin just having and Klopp having Salah on the touchline? Ram just said the stat, 12 big chances. So he still had the chances, whether he's starting on the touchline or not. And then Ali goes on to say, he isn't an out-and-out winger. We need him closer to goal. Well, I remember last season, mate, in spaces, and people were debating Salah's better than Prime Hazard, Prime Neymar. Show it. Show it. Because, respectfully, if you're better than those guys, you should be able to, you know, play out on the wing and it won't affect your game too much, in my opinion.
Didn't we also say the reason why so many people started to say he's better than Eden Hazard, which including myself, was that we're seeing a more complete Mohamed Salah, a player that is starting to create chances as well, alongside score them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we should be pushing him out wide. I think we should. No. Like my opinion is, I think we should play him with Darwin Nunez because I think he'll get the best out of both of them. And I think it'll also get the better. It'll also be a good situation for Harvey Elliott now that he's no longer in that middle of the park and expected to do that much running. So I get that. But we also saw his capabilities last season. And is it so much to ask of him to recreate that?
No.
Not for me, no. For me, no. If you want to be the best player in the world, or if you want to be up there with your Lewandowskis, your Benzemas, and players like that, it's not too much to ask. You know what I mean? That's how I see it.
We're going to move on to some transfer news, mate. Again, I alluded to this a bit earlier on. Mateus Nunes, it came out. Let me get the exact tweet up so that I can say it word for word. Just give me a second. But at halftime in the game yesterday, it came out that Liverpool are looking to bring in Mateus Nunes. And on the face of it, I'm thinking, okay, he's not the midfielder that I think we'd all want right now. But he's better, or he should be better than what we have at least. But then, as I read into it, mate, this thing's not for now. It's not for January 2023. It would be for the summer, which is ridiculous to me because we had the chance to go and get Mateus Nunes. And I kept telling people on Twitter, if we don't get Mateus Nunes, it's because they don't believe he's the right player. It's because they want someone else and we'll go and get someone else who is either better or better suited. But I was wrong because now apparently we've let Mateus Nunes go to Wolves for 40 whatever million. And there's apparently a clause in his contract where Liverpool get the first refusal to buy if he wants to move on. And apparently we're looking to trigger that, but in the summer, which just goes to show, Ram, how pathetic our club has ran from top to bottom. Why would you wait 6 months for him to go to Wolves? And let's be real, he's not exactly set the Premier League alight. I don't think he's played an awful amount of minutes. And now you're going to go and sign him for more money when we could. And by the way, if we get him in January, if we get a deal announced and confirmed for the summer or whatever, he can't play this season anyway, because that would be three clubs, right? Sporting, Wolves, and now us. I think he already played a game for Sporting before he went. So he can't play if we get him now, which just makes me think, who's running this club? Who's having the say in these decisions to allow Wolves to get the players that we are interested in and we miss out?
One thing's for sure, Jurgen Klopp wanted a midfielder this summer. I strongly believe he did. If you look at some of the, the journalists out there, the news about Konrad Leimer, how Liverpool wanted to have made an inquiry, they wanted to sign him. They made big steps in wanting to sign Konrad Leimer, but Leipzig were like, I know we've had good relations, but you've left it too late. Because if he came in June or July, we would have 100% let you go and get Leimer. But now you left it until the last day. And then Mateus Nunes, yes, I think Mateus Nunes was waiting for us. He was, because I think he thought he was at the level to play for Liverpool Football Club. And turns out we didn't really want him in the end. And then I know Eunice, you're saying Conor Lima's injury prone. I think we only need him for 20 games a season, to be honest. 20 games a season. Is that so much to ask? And even if he does get injured, I don't want him to start every single game. I want him to be the kind of backup player for someone like, if we do end up getting him, Jude Bellingham, or someone of like Mateus Nunes' standard. But then we go and we dilly-dally. Then we end up saying, Arthur Melo is the guy that we want. I'm like, Arthur Melo is not the kind of player Klopp wants. Yeah, maybe Arthur Melo of 2018-19, where he had legs and he had incredible talent and potential. Not Arthur Melo 2022, who went to Juventus and looks a shell of a player that he is. And it's been well documented that he cannot cope with a high intensity system. He couldn't cope with Maurizio Sarri's system, which is all about regaining possession from the ball and playing patiently. He won't cope with Liverpool with Klopp's system, which made no sense at all. But then people would say, oh, no, but he's the perfect replacement for Thiago. I knew from the start, and I think everybody, yourself included, Ben, everyone knew this smelt a lot like Saul for Chelsea last season.
Mm-hmm.
It smelt it. It stunk. But certain people didn't want to believe it. And now look what we have to do. We're now scavenging around for a player. Even, look, Eunice took the name right out. Dennis Zakaria. If anyone's watched Dennis Zakaria, a DM, he sucks. He sucks as a DM. But as a centre midfielder whose main priority is to cut off passing lanes and recycle possession, he is that guy. Why did we not go for him is beyond me. Even when he was at Borussia Mönchengladbach, I said we should have got him. I think if we don't get him, it could be another Leon Goretzka moment where we miss out on a decent player. I was turned out he's nowhere near the level of Leon Goretzka, but he's still a decent player and he still would have done the job for us. Like, why? Why? We went to Juventus looking for a midfielder and we got the midfielder that doesn't suit our system, but the other midfielder that suits our system, it was still at Juventus and now is at Chelsea. Make it make sense, please. Please make it make sense.
It doesn't make sense. And, you know, we were all told that when Tchouaméni died down after he went to Real Madrid, that Liverpool would look for players in that similar profile. Obviously, Zakaria is nowhere near as good as Tchouaméni. But, you know, you can see some similarities perhaps to the game. And, you know, we just, as soon as we... Exactly. And as soon as we lost out on our main targets, it just felt like they said, okay, fine. That's just Curtis Jones, James Milner, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Harvey Elliott. And it just felt like they thought quantity is quality. And we all know it's not. We've got so many players on our books that shouldn't be here, that should have been moved on a long time ago. And again, we are putting all our eggs into the Jude Bellingham basket. These guys better pray that Jude is sensible enough to think this is just one season for Liverpool. These guys better hope that, because if we've waited all this time, 2 years in the making, for Jude Bellingham's red carpet arrival to Anfield, and it doesn't happen because of one season where we say we don't get top four, you know, that's on them. That's on the owners. That's on whoever made these decisions. Because I've seen a lot of Pep Linger's slander in here as well. Maybe he has an input. I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know. But, mate, if after all this time we've waited for Jude and he doesn't come, that we need to make sure we call out every single person that's responsible for this shambles.
We are relying on Jude's family being Liverpool fans and him idolising Steven Gerrard as a player. That's what it's come to. That's what we're hoping.
Unless we get top four, then I think he'll come. If we get top four, he'll come. Yeah.
And obviously we have Arab owners at the same time, hopefully by then, whether it be Arab owners or someone that has money.
Don't hold your breath on that one, mate.
Like it's I don't I'm not sure what we're gonna do. I don't know when this new owners are gonna come. Hopefully come sooner rather than later. But I wanna quickly say, I don't wanna drag anyone out, but Mohamed, you said that certain players aren't Liverpool quality. Did we think Gini Wijnaldum was gonna be Liverpool quality? Did we think Andrew Robertson was gonna be world class? Like, we don't know until they are tested, and we're not asking them to be starters for the next 3 or 4 seasons. We want them just to be there, just to make sure the damage doesn't collapse. Make sure the house doesn't collapse, because right now the ceiling is leaking. There's water on the floor. There's mold everywhere, and there's live wires everywhere, and there's no form of insulation. The house is a dump. And all we need is trying to make it seem livable. And that's what the players of your likes of Nunez is, your Zakarias, your Conrad Lime is. That's what we needed. Yeah. I get it. If we went and got those players, and then, yes, we go out and we get the players that we want for the next 4 to 5 seasons, then, yes, I'm all for it. But when we need someone just to just to fill in the gap. And there's so many different opportunities to get them. And we don't do it. Like, what's the point? And we're going to lose midfielders anyway. We're losing Cater, Ox, and
Milner. Three are going. Yeah. So, you know what, as well, like, just on this comment, I actually agreed with this before the season. I actually agreed with it. I was telling people, you know, they're not good enough. These players you're saying, unless they're top quality players, I don't want. And I was wrong. I'll hold my hands up and say I was wrong. Like you said, Ram, we're not asking for. We are, but like, that's not what we need right now. What we need right now is players that are going to do their job better than Jordan Henderson, better than James Milner, better than Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, better than Fabinho as well. We've not mentioned him much. And even though I think the last few games he's been a bit better, but we're not asking for players that are going to come in and be generational and be here for 10 years. That will come in Jude Bellingham if we sign him. We need a Moises Caicedo or Amrabat or someone on that. I don't know who. I'm not a scout. I don't know the pool of players that are available for us. But what I do know, and what Jurgen Klopp and Pep Ljinders are clever enough to know, is that the guys we have doing that job right now are not going to get us anywhere near close to anything this season. Top four is pretty much what we can hope for, because we've got Real Madrid in the Champions League. There's no point even thinking about that game yet after what we've seen over the last couple of games. Again, I will never admit defeat, especially before a Champions League game, because that's our tournament. But right now, I'm absolutely dreading that. And I just hope that, and we're going to finish in a minute because it's gone on too long, that the comments that Jurgen Klopp said about, he gets fed up of been asking about all these, you know, new players, new signings. I just hope he's just saying it to try and keep somewhat of a good relationship with the owners. He doesn't actually think that. And this time, in 2-3 weeks' time, we'll be sat here with a midfielder, because if not Ram, on their own head be it.
If we don't get a midfielder, then I think we should just write off the season and say hi.
What does that look like for you?
Europa Conference League.
Okay.
Wow. Challenging for four trophies.
FA Cup run, maybe.
Challenging for four trophies. For me, the minimum was, after knowing that the title was gone, was top four in FA Cup. I would have taken that. Like, 100%. Cool. We did the minimum and we have something to build on. But now, I don't know. I really don't know. Hopeful, wishful thinking right now. I don't know where we can go from here.
Mm-hmm. And Ali says, Ben, FSU are praying for UCL football. Invest then. Invest. If you need UCL football to get the most amount of money for your club, it makes sense to make a signing now.
That's what it don't make sense. It don't make sense. If you don't invest and we don't get UCL football, you won't get a lot of... Our value, the club's value will drop. And you'll lose money. So there should be something where FSG might be like, okay, we'll put this money into the club, but the next owners will have to pay that sum of money to us as like a compensation kind of thing, so we can get our money back. Something along the lines of that, so that they're not actually paying for it. It's actually the new owners that's paying for for our players in January. Like, something like that could happen. But I don't know. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. That's a big problem at Liverpool. We don't know anything.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Go on.
Like, any fan that says, oh, we'll take it at face value, we all know Klopp BS's all the time. Klopp talks a load of BS. It's all PR. When people say they don't know, where they think that this is happening, or again with his nonsense comments, I don't listen to it. I don't, because honestly, it's all PR. Everything he says is PR. That's how it is. And then he has these weird subliminal messages. Like, respectfully to everyone that wants to try and interpret everything, we know nothing that goes on in Liverpool Football Club, because that's how the club has made it to be. And all we can do is just guess.
Exactly, mate. And let's just hope that something happens, and, you know, we'll be here to talk about it if it does. We're going to wrap up here, guys, because an hour's gone extremely quick. We are going to be back after the Wolves game, probably on Sunday, because I'm going. So we will be back on Sunday to discuss this, preview whatever, if anything's changed, whatever. If we look like someone's coming in the unlikely event, whatever, we'll be here to discuss it. Ram, legend, for jumping on once again, mate. Appreciate your time, and it's been a great conversation once again with you. So really do appreciate that. Make sure you subscribe to the channel, guys, if you haven't already. Smash a like button because it helps us a lot. And the podcasts are also available on Spotify and Apple. Big up, Ali, mate. Always here in every stream. Very, very much appreciated support from you. Take care, guys. And listen, let's just hope things get better. So, yeah, we will see you next time.